Money FM 89.3, the best of the afternoon update. Market View on Money FM 89.3.
Welcome back, and on Market View today, well, it's more like a market wrap. But before we continue on to what has been happening in markets the past week, let's first take a look at how the STI is faring this top of the hour. It's currently at 3:10 p.m. and the STI is still in the red. It's deeper down in the red, actually. It's down 1.12% at 3,178 points. Decliners are well outnumbering advancers, 358 to 161, after 938 million securities worth 763 million Singapore dollars changed hands so far. And for a market wrap of the week, to help us break down what has been going on in the past week, of course, we have our favorite Jeff Howie, market strategist at the SGX, on the line. Jeff, welcome back.
Thanks, Hongbin. Great to be here.
Happy Friday. Okay, so the STI, it's opened lower today. How did Singapore shares perform this week?
Yeah, it's down. It's 78, as you said just then. That's a 1.7% decline on the week. And most of the global benchmarks have been weaker on the week. FTSE China A50 is down 4.5%. Hang Seng is down 5.1% this week. But Nikkei has been the outlier with a 1% gain going into that final BOJ meeting, which is concluded now.
Okay. So who would you say are the biggest movers for this week?
Well, I guess most defensive is Sembcorp Industries. Mm-hmm. It has led the STI this week. It's generated a 2.7% gain.
Mm.
And it's interesting because utility stocks have been among the weakest performers across the world so far this quarter. But our utility sector here has booked net institutional inflows. And that's predominantly on the back of Sembcorp Industries obviously pressing ahead with that transition towards a greener portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, consumer cyclical has been the best performing sector in the global stock market so far this quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also seen the consumer cyclical sector draw the most net institutional inflows for the Singapore stock market so far this quarter. But what's different is that this week, when you look at, you've got Sembcorp Industry leading the gainers,
mm-hmm.
it's Jardine Cycle and Carriage, a consumer cyclical, which has actually led the decliners this week with mm-hmm. a 6% decline. And that tips the stock into a marginal decline now for the year to date at -0.5%. But you know, you got to keep in mind last year the stock also did generate a 45% mm-hmm. total return while increasing its net profit up 12% year on year.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you look also in the tech sector, because at the moment there is a lot of focus on growth stocks, and Silver Lake Access is up 4.5% in the week. AEM Holdings is up 3% on the week. At the end of last week, we saw Malaysia's Employees Provident Fund increase its substantial shareholding in AEM above the 9% threshold.
Mm-hmm.
So that's following it crossing the 8% threshold back October last year, and I think 7% in July last year, 6% mm-hmm. and 5% in June last year. So it's taken its holdings to another level per se. But also Silver Lake Access, of course, is the digitalization play that continues to service banks across Southeast Asia, and digital transformation is a very important theme for it. But when you look at the banks, they were among the laggards this week.
Mm-hmm.
They came in a close second so far this week to the global materials and resources sector. But Singapore's bank sector has been relatively defensive, averaging a 1% decline. That's less than a third of the decline of global banks.
Mm-hmm.
So that was as of the lunch break. It might be a little more now.
Jeff.
Yeah.
On that note, on the topic of banks, you know, the banking sector today is hit hard today. I mean, there's been trouble at a Silicon Valley-based lender that could, you know, point to broader risks for the banking sector. In fact, shares of Asian banks, they slid to the lowest in more than 2 months. We have Japan's Mitsubishi UFJ Financial Group declining as much as 3.3% today. We have Commonwealth Bank of Australia and South Korea's KB Financial Group, each falling about 2.7%. What about our local banks? Are our local banks taking a hit as well, or not so much?
Not so much. I mean, DBS is down at the moment 0.7% for the week.
So
that's comparing to around close to 4% declines for global banks. Now, I guess those that what you're talking about in the US, that those that's in relation to the two banks that are very technology focused. And you know, I guess the 2/3 of our the bank's total income here in Singapore is generated by net interest income, generated by net interest margin expansion, which is expected for banks. But they also did, of course, book loan growth last year, which has been a really important part of net interest income, not just the expanding margins, but the ability to actually grow loan growth. And if you, you look in the annual report for DBS, which has been released this, this week, you've got its loan portfolio. They look into the composition of loan portfolio and they note it's well diversified across industry and business segments. Business and construction, general commerce and manufacturing are the largest contributors to their wholesale portfolio. So I should also point out that the trio of DBS, OCBC, UOB, like Aboriginal, some of the Aboriginal banks, they're also heavyweights of the FTSE developed APAC ex-Japan Sustainable Yield Index. That index series excludes extreme yielding stocks and actually looks at the financial and operating strength of its constituents, specific emphasis on balance sheets and the ability to generate cash flow and so forth.
Okay, okay. And moving on now, according to a recent survey published by the Monetary Authority of Singapore earlier this week, private sector economists, they've barely changed their overall 2023 estimates for Singapore with the full year growth forecast of 1.9%. What are your expectations?
Among them, I would say the expectations were kind of a little hawkish, I guess, than the broader global expectations when we read the December survey. So it's no surprise that they're not too different. I think growth rate is, what, between 2 and 2.9, median expectation 1.9% for this year. That's up a little bit from last year. And it's the familiar themes. The most cited downside risks to the domestic growth outlook, of course, the escalations, potential escalations in geopolitical tensions, and the inflationary pressures, and of course spillovers from external growth slowdown is the most frequently ranked topside risk. And this is, we're seeing this in the week, this week. Crude oil, for instance, is down 5.5%, Brent crude, based on the outlook for interest rates. So I should say on the other side of the coin, what was interesting in that, in those surveys, is the most frequently cited upside risk to our growth in Singapore was the more robust growth in China. Come from the economic reopening and macroeconomic policy easing, a little bit of an auspicious percentage in that respondent survey. I think it was 88% of the respondents actually cited that as the most upside risk.
Well, in the same survey as well, you know, most survey respondents, they said they don't expect MAS to tighten policy further at its meetings this year. But, you know, with the U.S. Fed looking to continue to raise rates for longer, as of course warned by Jerome Powell earlier this week, will MAS not continue to tighten further? Won't they have to?
Yeah, well, it's interesting, right? Because in December, it was the same thing. They were saying the same thing. They didn't expect, the average of expectations were not expecting a change in April. But what's happened, we've actually had a lot happen because the outlook for growth and inflation is, of course, highly fluid. So when you actually look at the Singapore exchange rate, it's actually had quite a decent move and swing around since October 2022 when we had our last change. You should point out to Hongbin that the MAS was pretty quick to move. We had a total of 3 recenters and 3 slight appreciations of that, of the midpoint of the band, and that was, that started in October 2021, which is, you know, almost a good 5 months before the Fed actually moved. So despite the fact we haven't had any mid-policy, mid-moves since October, the outlook is still obviously really fluid. We've got a big inflation number coming out next week in the US, and the obviously global inflationary pressures, as we saw in the forecast, are a big risk. But at the same time, you haven't had any, thankfully, you haven't had too much, any financial instability and excess volatility in markets. And if you did that, did have that, then you could have a case for widening the band. But we'll just have to wait and see.
Okay, okay. But speaking of Powell, though, did the return of his hawkish rhetoric come as a surprise to you?
No, not at all. But it did surprise the market a little bit because, yeah, the expectations for the Fed funds rate did edge high into that higher for longer type of narrative that has been spoken. So we'll go a little bit quiet now because you have the blackout period for the ahead of the next FOMC beginning tomorrow.
Right.
And the expectations for a 25 basis point hike on the 22nd of March, they have now been reduced to below 40%, and majority expectations above 60% are now for a 50 basis point hike. And that's a pretty big move, because the odds for a 50 basis point hike doubled over the week, and they're up from, you know, up to, as I said, above 60% now, which is up from just 10% 1 month ago. The expectations really are now anchored to a total of 100 basis points of Fed fund rate hikes over the March, May and June meetings, and expectations for no change on the July meeting. And that means you've got growing likelihood for no reductions for the Fed funds rate for this year. And look, this is a big change from where we were at the end of last year.
Yeah, we are. Speaking of big change, markets are now pricing in rates to peak at around 5.6%, I believe. What are your thoughts? Is that possible, or are markets being a little too pessimistic?
Yep, that's exactly right. The peak rate is now expected to be at 5.5% to 5.75%. So just over the last 10 weeks, the expectations for that peak rate have increased by 75 basis points. And look, that's really in line with the Fed's narrative as well. As the Fed chair said in the statement this week, there is little sign of disinflation thus far in the category of core services, excluding housing, which accounts for more than half of core consumer expenditure. And that's that sub-aggregate that I've been talking about that has been range-bound between 5 and 4% for much of the last 1.5 years. So after we've got the employment number tonight, next big number is the Feb CPI. It'll be Tuesday night at 8:30 Sing time. And expectations are for the headline to come in a little bit at being up 6.6% year on year, which would be a little bit lower than the 6.4% in January.
And on the topic of central banks, of course, Bank of Japan, they've once again stuck to its easy monetary policy. Yeah. Any surprises there?
No, that was totally... Actually, it was expected, but it wasn't a given, Hongbin.
I think some people were hoping that Haruhiko Kuroda will surprise markets one last time, right?
Yeah, exactly. After that Christmas present last year. I mean, and you've also got to look at the inflation rate. It's at a four decade high.
Yeah.
And I guess energy is coming off a little bit with the blunt force trauma effect of the higher interest rate outlook. But Japan yen depreciation has also been a key driver of that inflation. And the dollar yen has pretty much returned to those levels that preceded that surprise mid-December tweak to the yield curve control policy. But the incoming governor has clearly said he does not intend to immediately change that supportive monetary policy stance. So what we've seen today does obviously help facilitate a smooth transition in the leadership of the Monetary Policy Committee. Yeah, it's all business as usual in Japan. We've actually got a REIT that's fully focused on Greater Tokyo area with 16 logistics properties, and that's probably trading 1 cent lower this week, but still has a good outlook for e-commerce and third-party logistic partners and so forth.
A lot of market movers this week, but what else should investors look out for the week ahead, Jeff?
I think the Singapore, I think next
17th. Non-oil exports?
Yeah, NOTX is always the 17th, unless it's a weekend. So 17th is NOTX, and for February it's going to be really important. Bloomberg estimates it will contract by 8% year-on-year, and I think like the NOTX, Taiwan and South Korea monthly exports, they've all been in year-on-year contraction since October of last year. Taiwan's Feb exports were below Bloomberg expectations with more contraction this week. Electronics and continued weak demand from China have been the overarching drivers of the export weakness over these three countries that do provide somewhat of a bellwether on regional trade. But also exports to the US for us will be in focus, because we did see a 30% year-on-year contraction in Singapore exports to the US in January. But the bigger one is, of course, the weaker demand from China, because I think the year-on-year decline was in the vicinity of 40% in January. That's after 30% declines, I think, for December through to September. 20% declines last year in July and August. So this is this will be a really important number. But look, there are some signs of green shoots when it comes to China. There was a report right at the end of last month that China's small independent refineries were doubling fuel oil imports in February amid good margins, and it was Malaysia origin fuel oil contributing the most to the increase. China Aviation Oil, Singapore is listed here. It's the largest physical jet fuel trader in the APAC region, and a key supplier of imported jet fuel to the PRC, and it's been impacted by the reopening momentum. It's at about 94 cents now, but it did rally from 66.5 cents to $1.08 on the outlook for the reopening momentum. But nonetheless, we are expecting there to be somewhat of an inflection point in global trade sometime this year, because IMF have world trade growth expected to decline 2.4% this year, but actually rise to 3.4% in 2024. So very fluid outlook when it comes to trade.
A lot of things to look out for next week. Well, thank you so much, Jeff, for joining me today.
Thanks so much, Hongbin.
Thank you. Have a great weekend, Jeff.
You too.
We've been speaking with Jeff Howie, market strategist at the SGX. Stay with Money FM 89.3.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.